Don't put it there. Oh, I just speak, I mean, for yeah, now, what can we do? The system is not functioning.
Go for it.
Yes, I'll let's talk to the market.
I mean, you okay, yeah, use this one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I know Thomas Timmerman has said that there was a high level of consultation with stakeholders, and I must say, way above average.
Even that accurate is very impressive. It is,
but you know, many of the stakeholders do write for some recommendations in terms of costs. And if I can just.
Why are your colleagues smiling away? We can't, I've been on that side, remember? I don't know officials, they come to follow me. And they literally lie. I've stopped them from lying.
We'll never do that.
No, I'm spinning. I'm not saying you're lying, but spinning is bad enough, right? Because there's no need to hide from Parliament. I'm telling you that actually, after for 5 years there, and I know what goes on in the two departments I was politically responsible for.
Thanks, Chair. I'm not sure if your interjection was relevant to your
question. No, it's funny!
You would like to spice
I can just only go by. Always, I'm very careful. I choose my. I say, if it's accurate, because I have no way of checking, nor does Kudasani, nor does he, Sean, nor does Bridget. Right? Bridget is excused because she's starting to work on the BRRR report, and she's working very hard like the rest of them. I think we should acknowledge people like that. She's gone to prepare the review of the annual reports of the other end. So over to you, David.
Thank you. Yeah, let me start again by welcoming the consultation process, and I know it's very outstanding, and we acknowledge that. But then I have some, with regards to interaction with stakeholders, some recommendations. And then one of the recommendations is the National Strategic Response each comment made in writing ahead of the undertaking of the workshops. The idea is that you have the workshops, but that you have not replied to the comments made in writing before the workshop, and that is what the proposal is. I don't know whether that is feasible. And they say it's similar to other jurisdictions, wherein they give written indication with reasons as to whether the proposal submitted was accepted or rejected. And they say that an example of the benefit of receiving a written response is that the public will be able to gauge whether the National Strategy really understands the background of the proposal, which deals with technical matters, and this will help to avoid having to repeatedly propose for legislative changes on an annual basis. And then, perhaps in the third instance, in the absence of the above, the current manner of undertaking workshops according to the stakeholder is not effective. I'd just like you to note that, please. Thank you, Chair. That is then in terms of
the
consultation.
Okay. Can you reply on the consultation issues?
I think, Chair, the problem we face with tax policy is that it's market sensitive. To respond to one party to say this is what we think is a problem, we've got to respond and put it out to all. That's the approach that we take. And I think even practically to respond to each and every submission is really not, I think would be very difficult, that may be honest. So we can take into account what people have said because there's more than one comment on the same particular issue and then provide our response. I think that's the way to do it. I think the other thing that could be considered, and I hope my colleagues will include, where I think there is a gap, is that once we respond, and once we publish, we hear the committee and we publish the book, it is pretty much, you know, almost certainly going to go through if the committee accepts it. That when we don't have timing difficulties like this, that after the bill is formally tabled, you might want to allow a quick round of comments, just for those who really don't like the change. Now, we can tell you some people who definitely come because they've not accepted it. So in this case, for example, one of the proposals, we know that there are differences, but we are proceeding. They will come to you. But there are also others who might have some other suggestions. So, you know, I would say at some point we need to look at that side of the process. The tension we face, of course, as government, is that if we haven't heard people and people do want to come and do you want to hear?
Our response is in this format, this document. The difficulty was, in order to get this document out, it would take a lot of time, and we won't be able to do it in time of the workshops. The question that Momo raised is, should we have another round of consultation after we publish this document? And there is a timing issue, because we run into serious time limits in order to get the bill passed every year. Now, if we obviously issued the bill much earlier in the year, we can probably do that, but for now, it's going to be very difficult.
But can I say that timelines are tight, because and by the way, we actually want to publish the text process, because I think, as you've seen, Chair, it is quite deep. We do try and respond. We do take comments seriously. And in fact, we learn from it, because it's market sensitive. The point is, we could get it wrong. So we often take U-turns. Now, the issue, I think, is that I can't see us ever doing the TLAC before July. It's quite tough. And that means you have less time as well. But if somehow the response document was perhaps 3 weeks ago, we could allow for one more hearing. Now, I don't know if that's possible. I'm just saying that's what we need to factor in perhaps for future years, on how to complete the process. Because I think there is that one to get in the process that we need.
Will the committee write this note on the process matter? But for now, I think, to me at least, I know what other colleagues and colleagues feel, you being reasonable in the circumstances, but it's nice to get, I mean, you'll never get consensus on tax, way in the world, you won't. Even if you give another month and a half, I mean, it's about people forwarding money. This is the one, it's not like the municipal systems bill or something, where you can endlessly negotiate with unions and labor. Maybe it's like a deal of our restructuring municipal services, even then you couldn't. We settled the property rates book. I think it's a record in this part. I think 320 hours of sitting and about 150 hours of my time, maybe, because who has to do it? Sitting outside meetings, 470 hours of property rates book. I think it's a history in this part. Just the committee with its TRC bill and our bill. I don't think any other bill, actually. And yet, even after we passed it, controversy around it. So, I think it's a normal human condition.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Momo, you yourself are identifying that maybe there's a gap, and you will give attention to it. We understand the market sensitivity, but since you've opened the door for reconsideration, part of it on our side was also accept that with these processes, elongated, so to speak, also means we have got pressing deadlines that we have to meet. So, having said all of that, it must be couched carefully for now. Consideration needs to be given to a possible review and so on. Okay, we'll tell you whether it's business from Peter Paul and so on. Okay, then it's slide 8 and 9. Any comments there? Any
benefit? Sorry,
slide 8 and 9. Page 4 and 5.
Is it on the fringe benefits?
Yeah.
Yes. Just a quick comment. It's a new text. Is it correct? Completely new text.
The car fringe benefit is not new. It's been in existence now for what?
We do the valuation of fringe benefit for defined benefit contribution. Slide 8 and 9. Your slide, yeah. Okay. So on slide 8 and 9, anything new?
Look, if it's a new text, we would like to encourage people to save, and then you tax them on the fringe benefits, to me that's a bit of a contradiction.
Yeah. I mean, this is really coming, so the previous... In the previous year, we put in a whole retirement reforms where we simplified taxation of retirement, deductibility of retirement contribution. So that's what Roman was talking about, the 27.5% and the 350. To really harmonize it, we're actually trying to treat defined benefit contributions like defined contribution contributions. So we actually just applying the same tax to defined benefit funds as we would apply to any defined contribution fund. So it is a new tax, but it's harmonizing and making the playing field level across all the different types of retirement funds that are out there. So we hope that by increasing the level of the retirement contributions that we've got there, because it used to be lower, and now we push it up to 27.5%, that would incentivize people to save more for retirement.
If I can correct, remember, what we did, currently you can only deduct up to 7.5% of your contributions as an individual. And then the contribution by your employer is on your behalf, but that's not a taxable income in your hand. What we're doing now, we're combining your contribution and the employer's contribution and allow you to deduct it. So although this is a fringe benefit in your hand, you still can deduct the full amount as a potential taxable income. And for most people, they will be tax neutral, and others will actually benefit because they can deduct more now. So it's just a restructuring of the system rather than the tax.
Okay, any other comments? Sorry? Yeah, we're coming to the next slide now. This is postponement of the retirement law for 2 years. You want to comment on it for a year?
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to note that I think it's the third bullet. This matter about forced retirement women. I think some of you actually gave us, we got an input that we've seen a few people that have taken out their monies and all that. And we've noted in the newspapers how this matter was explained by your department and by everybody else. How is this now setting up? Are we seeing a decrease in it to actually show that people have learned from the information that has been given? Noting that it became quite new in our country, that you know people were moving away from that. I would just like to ask that on slide 10, Chairperson. And then, with your permission, Chair, if I could move on to slide 11. On slide 11, there's this matter where NEDLAC had their new proposals and all that, and this has the implication on the delay and the restriction of law passed in 2013. I think, Chairperson, we as a committee will need to look at, especially the third bullet with those three points, and actually say to ourselves as a committee, how do we assist Momo and his team to actually address those matters? Like, let's say, for instance, the first issue, which will be delayed until 2017, if actually that is going to be feasible, that is going to be possible, or can we as a committee make a recommendation that we actually move the time to a bit earlier than 2017, you know, all those type of areas, including, again, the second point, again, 2017, you know, so that when we as a committee chairperson are drafting out our report, we take into consideration this matter of the timing, because timing has been addressed even earlier. I'm aware that my colleague asked about it, and then we kept addressing the issue of timing. But I think we need also to guide and recommend the matter of timing. Thank you.
Basically, the procedural issue here. Which is that there is a discussion taking place outside this meeting between the labor movement, the government, and so on. And it is a very contentious issue. And I think that there's nothing to hide, but Kusatu had made representations to us. In fact, there was a hint they wanted to speak here, and so on. And we can't use this committee as a bargaining party. So I think what you need to be very cautious. You see, looking personally, I am slightly concerned about the implications. But I don't think we as a committee have the technical capacity to do a full assessment of what we need, some independent evaluation of those things. We are politicians, we are not technical experts. But my own view hours are plea that we tread with caution here. Because there are political sensitivities here, there are negotiations taking place. We're still in the midst of those negotiations, I gather. I don't think Parliament should be used either by the executive to lobby Parliament to open the door for... You see, what we don't want is there's some negotiations taking place out there. Now, Parliament comes with a position, and then the executive says, you see, Parliament, we want to negotiate with you. We're agreeing on a two-year thing, and now Parliament's decided, no, it should be 1 year, we're bound by Parliament's decision. So if members from ILA want to, they must convince this committee, give us all the technical arguments independently. We are Parliament, we're not the executive. We mustn't be used. So I would like to know from ILA, looking at it, it seems reasonable to me. But I don't know whether we as individual members of Parliament have the capacity to evaluate that. And in view of the sensitivities around it, they can couch the bill the way they want, which is to say that up to 2 years, right? Which means that if you and the workers out there and the industry and COSATU and the other stakeholders agree, then you don't have to go to 2017. You can do it sooner. So, you know, I would suggest to be creative, to say up to 2 years. So you've got up to 2017, but maybe you can solve it before then. Rather than us getting in, because that's actually my responsibility. It doesn't matter whether the proposal comes from the ANC or any other party. It's to actually ensure that we know what we're talking about. And I'm telling, I know when you, there's a like emotional appeal here also. When you see that, you suddenly say, oh, no, 2 years is too much. But the consequences could be out there, you know, a whole lot different from a technical consideration. So you can say what you like. We need to discuss this. We might hold up the process here as well because we will get to get independent advice on this. But I would tread with caution. And I think there is a way out from here to cater for your concerns. I'm sure David's going to raise the same thing, which is to allow for flexibility. You don't have to sit for 2 years. If you strike a deal in NEDLAC and or with COSATU and or with civil society and or with industry, there's a way of dealing with that, apart from drawing Parliament into this thing without us thinking it through. But over to you, David. I think we covered, yeah. So on that issue, what we are saying in a nutshell is what I've said. That look, when we look at this, in our report to Parliament on the bill, we should draw attention that the committee feels, you know, well, let's see what your final version is, right? Then we will comment on it. But our current position is exactly what I've said, I'm not going to cover it, which is that we would like this thing expeditiously finalized, consensually as far as possible. And you look at those, but ultimately, it's your right as the executive and our right as Parliament to approve our bill, even if COSATU may disagree, as that often happens. Only right now we rejected the bill, an amendment itself, so it's not a big deal. But we should tread carefully at this stage. So that's all I'm pleading for. That is that we think you can amend the bill in a way that gives you that space.
So, Chair, I think that's useful to hear because. I mean, we were looking at the option of saying it takes effect in 2016, but say to COSATU and others who feel strongly about it that we will go ahead with our consultation process, and if that's not completed, we could come back to Parliament next year and ask for 1 year. So what we're saying is, in principle, the agreement is, I guess, the discussion we had with them, and I should say the Minister has not been here. You know, we are taking these issues too. That I think the department is clear that we do need 1 more year. Okay, just that a lot of I think employers also have to be prepared, and it gets back to the question on the member aid. That if you look at the rumors that were there, actually the facts are it's not because of the facts on the ground. The facts are quite clear. That government didn't change any rules on preservation. So people could even cash out, even with this change, and it takes effect next year, they can still cash out their all their, let's say, provident fund amount, for all the contributions made up to March next year. They could even cash it out in 7 or 8 years' time. There's no need to resign. You can still do that. Because only your new contributions after whatever date of effect and when it reaches 150,000, which will take another 5 years, you will really start feeling, if you regard that as a negative side, the negative effect. We think even that is a positive effect. But on the other hand, and bear in mind, it's not saying you can't cash out, even then the system will be 1/3 is the lump sum, 2/3 get annuitized, the usual thing with pension fund. But what it denies people is to get the tax benefit if they are paying the tax, which if you on a provident fund you don't enjoy that benefit. So there are issues like those. So what we said is we could go up to 2 years, so there's no pressure, but if the consultation process is fast, we can then start implementing. But you know, one does need sufficient period for customs and so on. So in a sense, you've got to complete the discussions at least by June next year. So we could, as an option, look at it, I'm not sure how we'll go, and say it's 2016, and if the discussions aren't complete, then next year amend it to 2017. That's another way of dealing with
the same idea.
But you know, we don't want the unions then not to get it wrong. If we were to do that, we are saying in principle, and that's why we're making it public, that we're hoping to reach consensus, and if we don't, then we'll come back
that's
and make it 2017. So that could be
that's
another
a tighter way
of
doing it, and maybe that's better for you. And I think that's what you negotiate.
Okay. Okay, we can look at that, that as an option.
Okay. So the next section is 12, tax-free savings, 13. Slides 12 and 13, any comments? Well, then the fringe benefits car story, that's 14, 15. Any comments? Then excessive interest limitation rate, that's 16. 17, 18. No comments. Okay, now on RSD, can you explain this again to me?
Yeah.
I didn't fully follow. Can somebody just briefly explain what you're doing here? I'm just confused here.
So, what we do, the main change we make here is that in terms of the definition of R&D, certain activities are excluded from the incentive, even if they are R&D, in the minds of many businesses. And so we had a very tight definition. And one of the exclusions specifically was around clinical trials of generic medicines. And we had interaction with industry and with the department, and we now agreed that we'll amend the definition of R&D or the provisions to include those particular type of as R&D for the purpose of the incentive. That's the main amendment we made. There are a few smaller technical ones you will see in the discussion document. The one thing that we don't do is to define what is innovative. And what the lawyers are telling us, they now have to fall back on the picturing definition. And they are of the view that that is causing all sorts of problems in interpretation. And that's work that we will come back to the committee next year to see how can we resolve this interpretation of innovation which excludes certain activities depending on how SARS will interpret it. And that's what we're not doing. So those are the two big issues.
Comments on this,
thank you,
David.
Thank you, Chair. Gwyneth, National Treasury continues to work with DST to try and ensure that the administration of the system. When do we conclude on this matter? Because it can't continue to be a discussion somewhere in the world. DST and social.
I must remember that the way we are dealing with the R&D as of last year is slightly different. Previously, the law provided companies an automatic deduction. There was no approval process. what happens is that when they are audited, in some cases, it was then interpreted by SARS that your activity didn't qualify. Therefore, they reversed it. So there was a bit of uncertainty in the minds of many taxpayers around whether they will qualify or not, because there was the option of SARS reversing it. At the same time, taxpayers were supposed to report information to the DST, and they didn't. So there were two gaps that we're dealing with. Last year, the year before, we changed the legislation to allow for an adjudication committee, so that once the committee has adjudicated a particular R&D proposal, the Minister of the DST, the Minister of Science and Technology, can approve it. That provides a lot more certainty for taxpayers. Which means SARS can now come and say you don't qualify because there was a different process for it. That move from the automatic to the adjudication process took a bit of time. I think most of the issues have been sorted out. The DST had to build capacity because it's their responsibility to the infrastructure, the administration. I think they've got it now, more or less, in place. As I say, there's only the one issue. They also published guidelines now, which took some time. The guidelines was published about 2 months ago, 3 months ago. And they're going to, they're processing the comment, and I think they're going to have a final set of guidelines at the end of this year. So we've made a lot of progress, Chair. And I hope we can report back to the committee next time.
David?
Thank you. Just a quick comment on the declining line of investment in R&D over the years in terms of GDP. I mean, it's, I think it's now 0.54%, and the average in the world is about 2%, if my memory serves me right. So we really need to encourage this. And one of the problems that I have is the recourse mechanism. That it's only the high four. Can't we introduce the other sort of recourse mechanism? Will you consider that perhaps in the future? That's the one question. And then in terms of the definition of innovation, the first of the world criteria, that's a bit of a tough one on to me. It's a bit strict. Can't we make a proposal, the first in South Africa proposal, you know, even if it's a bit amended, but to make it easier, easier entry into this category. And then the last one that stakeholders have a problem with, not myself, the issue of the relevance of SARS members on the adjudication committee. If we can somehow have a different structure, it doesn't, it seems as if SARS is the top each in this regard. I'm not quite sure.
We did discuss this.
Yeah, we did discuss it, and I think we agreed
that
they should be there.
But if you want to open it up again, then it's fine.
I'm flagging any problems.
I'm still not happy with your answer, let me tell you. But I gave up because I can't come into my aid the technical. This is a terrible committee woman to chair. Because the issues are so technical that unless you're an expert in this area, or even half understand, you can't. You're not a minister of legislation, or even justice. You've got that law. Here I feel very cautious and very frustrated actually because I don't really know whether our oversight is as rigorous as it should be. But I wasn't convinced, my friend, but I can summon a strong argument. David, if you can summon a strong argument here, we must have to review. Give us a strong argument here
on
this issue of how they responded and why you don't accept what they say. Or it's work in progress, we agree.
I think I'll get back to get
the
National Development Plan
objective.
Yeah.
No, we all agree
on that. Yeah, we all agree on that. Yeah, and it's a party political issue. Yeah. Sorry, my friend. Chair, I think on the definition, I'll come back to the committee next year. Make sure that it's right.
Can you not
send
to the party
for our. That's the definition.
Okay, we'll hold you to that.
On the stakeholders and SARS's role, my suggestion, Chair, is I'm going to bring DST to the next
meeting.
And they will explain why they need SARS on their committee.
Yeah. But just to follow my friend logically, that because they say they need you, therefore Parliament must agree.
I'm just going to give you a different perspective.
Yeah, okay. No, I believe you actually. I mean, it's nice to be skeptical, because that's what Parliament's meant to be. But we cannot question, why would you lie? It's absurd for you to lie. I mean, I accept the good things of what you say. But when a DST is acting in its own best objective interest, bearing in mind what David and I were saying, is another matter. The Parliament doesn't have to listen to either of them. As long as you understand that. But for now, since we cannot summon a strong enough argument against it, we'll live with it. Yes,
We are half half, as I recall. So,
but stakeholders who know the area complain. It was a very good input by that guy. He was very impressive. All I can tell you is, often as a politician, I'm sure it applies to some other degree to all of us, we're guided by our instinct. Okay? When we don't understand issues, we can see the compelling case. He was passionate or not, but we're not fooled by passion. I mean, who knows passion better than politicians? The point I'm trying to make is, I was just struck by the quality of the input, the coherence of it, the adroitness of some of his points, and the precision of it. It was one of the better inputs we received that day, actually. And he seemed a very genuine guy. So, you know, we were taken, I think. But there you are, you replied. We accept that for now. Okay, let's move on.
Okay.
So the next issue, sorry,
what's the recourse one, again, it deals largely with the capability of the adjudication committee, because the question is, the recourse to whom? If you're going to build in a recourse mechanism, say the minister has now denied the intent, and then the taxpayer now needs to respond and say, can I object or whatever, will he have to go back to the adjudication committee, or will he have to go back to the minister? The problem that we face at the moment, if it goes back to the adjudication committee, the workload of the committee will just excessively astronomical, and they will not cope with it. So we will have to make sure that if we build a recourse mechanism in, that the administration has bedded down sufficiently that they can handle it.
I think you're covered. Okay, thanks. Yeah, fine for now. There's a small business tax corporation regime, your tax regime you've withdrawn that, right? So can you move to zero rating of goods for agriculture? Oh, yeah, what's that mean, David?
Chairperson, I would like to have the, there's an extension that's now being built in, but the bottom line is that you said that it is got a fence in the law, and what's in the law now is a 14% value added tax, MIP, for those agricultural products.
Not now, but when it comes in effect on a date after 12 months. So
yes, but the principle is accepted that we will not then retain the zero rate.
That's what we propose.
That's what you propose. Now, I would like to have another proposal, that we retain the zero rate until the discussion is completed, and then the implementation that fit in the determined.
I was going to ask the same thing, by the way. Why can't you put it the other way around? You know why? It's also in your interest.
No.
Because you were not in whom or where you come.
You're
a politician. So to win them over,
mm-hmm.
I mean,
I take exception to your comment that
you're a politician. Politicians play a technical role, right? No. Listen, all I'm saying is, remember the 1990s, up to the early 90s, right? And then just apply that. Look at your wish to actually make them feel good and say, okay, you're delaying it for a year. You'll still get what you want, presumably, if you present an argument you did. So why don't you turn it around? I was also wondering, you see, David, I forgot about that point, meaning it reminded me that when I first heard them earlier, it struck me, why don't you turn it around? You still have the same effect. What do you say to that? Like David said,
yeah.
Yeah, it's also a bona fide. It's a bona fide attempt to negotiate. Why should somebody come to you if you're going to do it anyway? You're only delaying it for a year. Is there some material difference?
Perhaps it's useful just to look at the draft wording provision, which is the subsection comes into operation on a date determined by the minister by notice in the gazette, but not a date earlier than 12 months after. It is a year that nothing can happen. It's only at some point thereafter.
No, that's the issue we're currently about. We say precisely that what would be the point of negotiating? All you're going to do is secure information and seek to establish consensus. If you were to say what David is saying, then at least bona fides are more accessible. That you are serious. But, I mean, if you present the argument as strongly as you did before this committee,
during the retirement reform, the default issue always comes up. And yes, you do change the power. The law is there. You earn a strong position. I guess what you're asking, and I think it's a fair question,
rather put this next year, so you keep, you want to keep the status quo, and then finalize. The issue for SARS would be then, will it need another 12 months, or Frank, how open are we on this, just given the impact, I guess, that's the question that we ask.
Well, I think we demonstrated the last time around that the impact is nowhere near as big as we
yeah,
expected.
Yeah.
So the question really is how to phrase the default. The concern I would then also have is that we end up in negotiations for the next 5 years.
Endlessly,
yeah.
No.
You
can put that in the law that you will. I don't know if you can, but at least we can put in the report in Parliament so that the negotiations take place for a year and then you must resolve the issues. I don't know how you can do it legally. We don't think you give us an answer now. We're putting to you what we think. Are we agreed on that? And we're asking that you consider it, okay?
Okay.
And when you come to us again, you say to us why you couldn't do it. Think about it.
I think that's a good point.
Okay. Then the next one is, that's it, is it? Anything else? Right, anything on this last slide? Nothing, members? If that's the case, can we thank you very much for firstly coming in sooner than you were meant to. It also helps you because you get your earlier flight out of here. And you should also say that, look, overall, given that some of us are very new here, this is a learning curve for us. We haven't been as rigorous as we'd like to be. But we are impressed, at least I think we are, all of us, with the quality of the information, the quality of the argument.